From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from the Excelsior.
West Portal.
Potrero Hill.
I'm from the Bayview.
Coming up, Valeo hopes to plug into the electric car market.
This could be potentially the biggest thing to happen in Valeo in many, many years.
Then an effort to bring a California frog back from the brink of extinction.
What we're doing is basically inoculating these frogs just like you would get a vaccination shot.
And it's a frog, it's a gator, it's a dragon, boat. What is this little known sport teaching Bay Area kids?
I used to be shy, but then Dragon Boat taught me how to step out of my comfort zone. It also taught me how to become more of a leader and not be scared to do what I want or say what I want.
Don't be scared. Cross Currents is next. This week, a California assemblywoman is expected to introduce legislation that would require 15% of all new cars to be emission-free in the next decade. Under that law, automakers that fail to sell enough electric vehicles would be required to make payments to rival companies that do, like Tesla Motors. That's why the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers called it a handout to electric car companies. It would also be a boon to the towns these companies operate in. Pretty soon, Valeo in the East Bay might become one of these electric car company towns. The city of Valeo lost its largest employer in the mid-1990s when the Mare Island Naval Shipyard closed. Then, 8 years ago, the city filed for bankruptcy, and it struggled to recover. But now, electric cars might be the jumpstart it's been waiting for. A startup called Faraday Future has entered into exclusive negotiations with the city for the right to build an assembly plant on the northern tip of the old Naval Shipyard. Max Pringle reports.
Longtime Valeo resident Charles Bartlett is showing me around the northern tip of Mare Island, where Faraday Future, backed by Chinese investors, is looking to build a 157-acre assembly plant. Mare Island is a peninsula located just across the Napa River from Valeo's waterfront. There's nothing on the northern edge of the island now except derelict Navy dormitories and gray, graffiti-tagged abandoned warehouses. Broken glass litters the pavement, and weeds sprout up from the rubbish-strewn courtyard.
It looks like what happens when nature starts to take over. You know, we're looking at just everything green growing around it. Not anything, more like the green that's growing is weeds, things that thrive in the worst conditions. And that's what we have here, the worst conditions.
Bartlett thinks the Faraday Future facility could revitalize Mare Island and the local economy.
The potential for it, not just to bring jobs, but high-paying jobs, that's key. That's key to Valeo, because for so long, Valeo has been more of a service economy. There's no shortage of fast food places, restaurants, I guess a movie theater, retail, and all of that is minimum wage jobs.
When the Navy left, it took hundreds of high-paying middle-income jobs with it. A Department of Defense study at the time estimated a $500 million annual hit to the local economy. In 2008, the city became the first city of its size to declare bankruptcy because of the mortgage crisis and public service pension costs it could no longer afford. City officials and residents have been looking for ways to fill the gap left behind when the Navy left. Bartlett says Faraday Future could have a ripple effect as other businesses grow up around it.
There's going to be a sort of a network of suppliers that build up around Faraday. Some of those, you know, may be far away, but many of them will be local.
What if every drive was the opportunity to make a smart choice for the planet?
That's a Faraday Future promotional video. The company says the Valeo facility will include a showroom and test track where people can come to see and test drive the cars, which are now in the concept phase of development. Early concept drawings show a car that resembles a high-performance sports car similar to a Lamborghini or Bugatti. Currently, there is no listed cost. In May, the city council unanimously approved the exclusive bargaining agreement with Faraday Future.
This could be potentially the biggest thing to happen in Valeo in many, many years.
Valeo City Manager Daniel Keene was at a recent city council meeting. He says Valeo wants to be at the cutting edge of the fast-growing industry in California.
So we're very excited that the council is supportive of us moving forward to negotiate with this company. They promise a lot of things for our community that are very important to us, particularly jobs and investment.
Keene says Vallejo residents are also excited about the prospect of an environmentally conscious company.
We see this as really an ideal kind of business for Vallejo and the Bay Area because of the green nature of it, the fact that they're going to manufacture electric cars here in California, which I think is pretty easy to say. California is the hotbed of where people want to buy and see electric cars.
The city says it would cost more for the environmental cleanup and infrastructure upgrades needed on the land than what the land is currently worth. Many of the old buildings contain lead paint, asbestos, and other materials that the company would have to remove. But Faraday Future spokesman Ezekiel Wheeler says the Bay Area location makes it a bargain.
Vallejo is of interest to us primarily because of its location in the Bay Area.
Wheeler says you can't beat the Bay Area for technical know-how. And the electric vehicle, or EV, industry would benefit from it. Industry observers say Californians make up about half of all registered EV owners nationwide. California once had 5 car manufacturing plants. Now that number's down to 1, and that's the Tesla electric vehicle plant in Fremont. The state has offered numerous incentives for EV drivers, including a $2,500 rebate and access to the carpool lane for solo drivers.
We have an office in Silicon Valley, and utilizing those resources and the talent and the EV enthusiasm that follows the Bay is a prime location for us.
The company has paid a $200,000 fee for the exclusive right to bargain with the city for use of the land. Wheeler says the company is willing to pay for the development costs on Mare Island, whatever the cost, because it's a win for the company and the city.
We're really excited to bring the economic development to the city of Vallejo in the form of, you know, our monetary investment, as well as bringing jobs and really good paying jobs for great workers and capable workforce that we find here in Vallejo.
Faraday Future would like to compete with Tesla as an electric car maker. Tesla operates a vehicle production facility in Fremont and is one of the state's largest private employers. Faraday has recently started work on a $1 billion manufacturing facility near Las Vegas, and it hopes to open its Vallejo facility in a couple of years. Still, some Vallejoans are taking a guardedly optimistic view of the Mare Island proposal. They're urging the city not to jump on the first offer from the company and to keep its options open for other, possibly better offers which may present themselves.
They have to analyze how much they're going to get long-term, the city is, and how much the, and what the risk involved in having all their eggs in one basket fail.
Steve Souza grew up in Vallejo and owns property in the city. He says the city has considered other Mare Island development proposals, including a casino and a cement plant.
If it goes in, it's going to go right into Mare Island, where the Navy workers used to, where the civilian workers and the military workers used to be. And it just seems like a good fit to replace those nuclear submarines with electric cars.
Negotiations are expected to continue until the end of the year. If approved, Faraday Future says their facility could be completed in 2 years. In Vallejo, I'm Max Pringle for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Baba. While California pushes automakers to curtail climate change, environmentalists in the state are also fighting species extinction in the Sierras, 53 tadpoles at a time. Get this. Mountain yellow-legged frogs used to be bountiful, hopping out from under hikers' feet anywhere there was water. Now, they're critically endangered by both non-native predators and a deadly fungal disease that's killed over a third of the world's amphibian species. So last summer, the Oakland Zoo gathered a bunch of tadpoles from the mountains. And as those tadpoles grew, Zootechs inoculated them against the disease. This month, those same frogs were returned to their native environment, ready to procreate and regenerate the mountain yellow-legged frog species. KALW's Colin Peden wanted to know how biologists do that. So he visited the zoo last year and reported this story.
I'm in a room stacked with rows of 50-gallon fish tanks, surrounded by gurgling water pumps. But this isn't a fish store. I'm with conservation biologist Jessie Bichel in a building way behind the scenes of the SF Zoo. She's giving me the lowdown on the tadpoles' menus.
These guys eat primarily algae, so we give them a couple different options for algae. We give them an algae gel that we make here. We plate that out. Then we also plate a different type of algae for their evening meal.
These fish tanks are a far cry from these tadpoles' natural habitats. Still, they're thriving and are about to become froglets. Yeah, that's the technical term, froglets.
This tank now, we've been having, it's in like metamorph mania in here. Yeah. So even just like 2 weeks ago, we had 55. Now we're down to about 25 in this tank.
They're turning into mountain yellow-legged frogs. It's a species that's native only to the high Sierra Nevada. Imagine ice-cold snowmelt ponds and creeks surrounded by lodgepole pines. So what are they doing here?
Just this summer, we had eggs. We collected eggs, brought them in. They hatched. And this is our last remaining group.
Bichel is raising these tadpoles from egg to adult. It's part of a huge effort to ensure the species' survival. You see, what was once one of the most common sounds of spring in the High Sierra, their weird buzzing frog call, is now one of the rarest. That's why, for conservation biologists, these tadpoles represent an important investment in the future. One researcher spent years following mountain yellow-legged frog populations. In 2005, he was greeted with a terrible surprise.
As I got to the shore of the lake and I looked around, I started seeing a few here, a dozen there, 100 there. And by the time I walked the shoreline, there were thousands, literally thousands of dead frogs floating around in the water, upside down, bloated on the shoreline, dried up. It was one of the worst sights I've ever seen in my entire life. And unfortunately, it wasn't the last time that I saw that.
That's conservation biologist Vance Bradenburg.
I'm an associate professor at San Francisco State University.
The killer turned out to be a fungus, not the portobello mushroom kind of fungus, but a microscopic disease-causing one.
This fungus is called Batrachochytrium dendrobatidis.
Batrachochytrium dendrobatidis. That's a mouthful, but it's worth knowing, because it's implicated in a huge global epidemic. You can also call it chytrid, or BD. What you need to know is that it causes a massive skin infection. Among other things, this prevents the frogs from breathing through their skin. Most frogs die of cardiac arrest due to the stress of the disease.
Here in California, or throughout Central America and South America, it's wiped out literally hundreds of species. But what's really interesting is that even in those same habitats where these mass epidemics have occurred, there's a few species that survive.
Researchers look to discover what might be causing this resistance. A lot of us have heard of beneficial bacteria by now. They've found that there are actually skin bacteria that protect some of these frogs from infection.
It turns out that they have these bacteria that produce antifungal compounds.
Research confirms that by introducing these bacteria, this species is called J. lividum, you can prevent the frogs from getting the fungal infection in the first place. But while this works in controlled lab experiments, SF Zoo's Jessie Bichel tells me this species isn't abundant enough in the High Sierras.
You can't just dose the frog once with J. lividum and just expect that it's going to make it. It has to continuously be exposing itself to the environment. If it's not in the environment, it's not going to work.
Oh, man.
So instead, what we're doing is looking at creating an adaptive immune response. So basically inoculating these frogs just like you would get a vaccination shot.
So here at the zoo, the frogs are getting these shots in a program organized by a coalition of researchers.
It's a combination of U.S. Forest Service, Cal Fish and Wildlife, the Tahoe Basin Land Management Group, and then a variety of researchers that are involved.
They're trying to give the mountain yellow-legged frog a boost, a head start, so that they can be released back into the wild and have a better chance against this epidemic.
We had a really successful year this year. I mean, I have over 150 animals that will be released this year and next year.
This is exciting news for Bushell and all the others involved. But put that in context. That's still just 150 animals being released from a species that used to be incredibly abundant, as Vredenberg recalls.
You walk along the shores of these lakes, and there are so many frogs in the shorelines that as you're walking, it sounds like rain hitting the water. And there can be schools of tadpoles that can be black in the water.
Vredenberg says that this shows how important they've been to the ecosystem in the past.
Because everything that could eat them in the high Sierra Nevada ate them. Everything from brewer's blackbirds and ravens, small mammals, all the way up to bears would actually eat these frogs, both the tadpoles and the adults.
But he's hopeful for the future.
I really do think they're survivors, and they've been able to survive for 5 million years, probably a lot more. They should be able to survive this.
50 years ago, it wouldn't have even occurred to conservationists to raise these frogs from egg to adult because they were so common. Maybe in another 50 years, this will be the case again. For Cross Currents, I'm Colin Peden.
That story originally aired in June of 2015. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Baba. So, the Sierras are hopping this summer. You know where else is? Rio de Janeiro, where the high jump, the long jump, and even trampoline are taking place in the Summer Olympics. Yep, trampoline is an Olympic sport. Well, there's another popular, if obscure, sport that is almost as old as the original Olympics in ancient Greece. It's not in this year's games, but it is a big deal in the Bay Area, if you know where to look. A student reporter in our high school summer internship program, Jackie Chu, headed down to the water to bring us this story.
I'm at Lake Merced in San Francisco for Dragon Boat practice. Kind of smelly like usual, but you could get used to it when you're a paddler. Today it's warm, some days it's cold or cool.
Breathe in, breathe out, in, out. Believe in each other, guys, believe it, believe in each other. Paddler, you ready? Attention, please. Everyone leg dry the same. Go!
My coach, Mike Nago, is giving paddling commands. My team's name is CYC One Breath, and right now, we are practicing different paddling strokes we'll be using when we're racing.
Come on!
Up, up,
nice!
Up. 5, 7, 9.
Come on!
Up, up, up!
Nice!
Dragon Boat looks like a gondola, but with a colorful scale pattern on its side. During a race, we have a giant tail attached to the back of the boat and a head of a dragon attached to the front of the boat. There are about 18 to 19 paddlers on this boat currently. All of the paddlers are students from different schools around the Bay Area. Dragon Boat is a workout. People on the boat are paddling and everyone's kind of tired.
Keep your eyes up! Better! Anchor! Now!
Anchor! Now!
That's right! Keep this! Believe in it! Believe in each other! Good job. Way to pay attention to each other, huh?
Our coach gives us positive feedback for having good timing and power.
You guys felt it when there's only 3 rows paddling, yeah. And then it's your turn to come in. You're like, oh yeah, I gotta help them. That's the kind of motivation you want for each other. When you're sitting there waiting for your turn, you should be like, man, come on, let me in, let me help.
This is one of the 3 practices my team has each week. The people I know join Dragon Boat to get stronger, to meet new people, and be part of a team they could call family.
I really love Dragon Boat. Oh my God.
My teammate Nancy Jing is a veteran paddler.
I used to be shy, But then Dragon Boat taught me how to step out of my comfort zone. It also taught me how to become more of a leader and not be scared to do what I want or say what I want. If there's anything better than Dragon Boat itself, it's the bonding between your teammates. That's something you can never get or you can never buy.
She's made a lot of new friends over the years. For each paddler on this team, Dragon Boat has really become an important part of their life. Here's another paddler, Marie Moreno. She's a captain in training.
A race is the most intense thing I've ever experienced. Everyone is really nervous lining up to the race line, and it's just really scary. And sometimes you're neck and neck with another boat, and that just, the pressure is so high.
The day after practice, I volunteered for a race at Seaplane Lagoon in Alameda. Teams practice for months and months to prepare for a race like this. It's a very hot day. There's air hangers and air carriers in the distance. There's a lot of student paddlers, adult paddlers, and spectators around cheering, chattering, yelling, and eating. A lot of the people are paddlers wearing their jerseys and personal flotation devices.
Hi, I'm Jenny from CYC Dragon Boat. I've been a captain for 2 years, and I have been paddling for 4.
Before she races, she has a talk with her team. Jenny's always excited for her races.
Heck yeah, I am! We've been practicing for approximately, I would say, 2 months for this race. But I think our biggest one is going to be Long Beach in 2 weeks. So this is going to be, like, I guess, a little eye-opener before that race, since this one is only a sprint and it's 250 meters.
Jenny's meeting up with her team before the race. Today, she'll race in a Dragon Boat sprint. Instead of going the normal 500 meters, they'll go 250 meters. Jenny and her team paddle to the start line, ready to race.
All right, all boats, let's start moving up to the start line together, slowly. Okay, three, hold where you are, three, hold where you are. One, hold where you are, so holding. Two, come on up one stroke, three, hold hard. Five, six, where are you? Give me one stroke, five and six. Two, hold hard. Are you ready? Attention, please.
Dragon Boat is a really old sport that originated from ancient China, about 2,500 years ago. Right now it's popular there and has moved into North America, Australia, and Europe. Jenny's team finished up the race. Like in every race, each team put their best out onto the water, but not everyone gets first place.
The wind really picked up though, and we had a lot of wakes in our boat, so I sit toward the front half and we experienced a lot of like waves hitting at us.
Today's race is over, but if you see a dragon racing across the water in the Bay Area, now you know what it is. In Alameda, this is Jackie Chu for Cross Currents.
Jackie Chu was a student reporter in our high school summer internship program. And he's just one part of our fierce team, which includes Leela Day, Nicole Grigg, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Jurgen Klemm, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, and Mary Lee Williams. Line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Astronauts Etc. from Oakland. They've got a free show at Stern Grove in San Francisco beginning at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Get there early for good seats. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.